Okay, my friends, we find ourselves on Gimel Amud Beis 3B. And if I have my way, we'll have quite a selection of different sources tonight. I'll just whet your appetite. Oh, the banging begins on cue. We have Chasugei Chana from Rav Silverstein. And then hopefully we'll be doing a Ritva and a Sfas Emes. Generally, I'm sure you've heard this of the Sfas Emes in the context of his work on the Parsha, but there's also Sfas Emes on Shas, which is fantastic. And then, if there is extra time, I would love to do this piece from Rav Soloveitchik. Again, one of those people who everyone thinks of Rav Soloveitchik for his verbose, eloquent, but verbose literature, like Lonely Man of Faith and Halachic Man. Which God knows what he's actually saying. I have the unpopular opinion it all could have just been put in an email and that would have been fine. But he was a Rosh Yeshiva, first and foremost. So he has a lot of great Torah. And by the way, you know what's really cool about the Rishimos, which is a write-up of his Shiurim? I was at Evergreen shopping area in Muncie. We were doing our first round of Pesach shopping. We have to do a second round also. That's how these things go. So we did the first round, and in the Evergreen Shopping Center, it's like a little Hasidisha mall. They have a Svarim shop, and I'm browsing through. I'm like, oh, maybe I could find like another fun sefer to add to my repertoire. And I saw Rav Soloveitchik's Rishima Shiurim on the shelf. So it just goes so far to show you know, how far it can make it, and Torah is Torah. So that's what it comes down to. That's our common denominator. Okay. So on Gimel Amud Beis, let's just do a bit of a reminder. What we learned the last time was that in Kol HaTorah Kula, in virtually all areas of Torah, whenever there is a requirement for a house is defined by Dalid al Dalid Amos, 4 by 4 Amos. In Hilchos Mezuzah, it's very relevant. This leads to the question, as we've talked about, walk-in closets or rooms that don't fit a 4 by 4 configuration perfectly. Are they chayv and mezuzah? We, and then square footage. This is relevant for the case of, we're going to talk about Eruvei Chatzeros and Shidduch Mevos. That, in theory, all of us, I think Rabbi Kol has it at the Young Israel, we rely on that one, but it should be renewed before Pesach. All of our homes are combined together. It's as if we're all living in the same house, and that way we're allowed to carry from one home to another home on Shabbos and Yom. Well, Yom Tov, you're allowed to carry anyway. You're allowed to carry on Shabbos. And then we gave a number of other examples. You can use a house to combine a city together. And then we asked the question, wait a minute, so why do we get away with a sukkah only being 7 by 7 tefachim? Right? So an amah is like about 1.5 feet. Again, every measurement is subject to like 10 million opinions on what precisely it is. Every rabbi and his grandmother has a precise opinion. It's like when we talk about Yad Soledis Bo on Shabbos. So the threshold for water being hot enough to cook vis-a-vis violating the Isser of Bishul of cooking on Shabbos, and also vis-a-vis kashrus, by the way, is Yad Soledis Bo. Enough that your hand's going to recoil. It's going to get burnt by it. So the issue is that's not a precise temperature. So the main street and the poskim can range anywhere from around 110 to like 180 something degrees. And I'm sure there's outliers I'm not even aware of. So that's the challenge when it comes to these things. But anyway, a tefach is like a fist, more or less, and an amah is like 1.5 feet. So there's the significant difference. So we answered that a sukkah is meant to be a diras arai. It's not meant to be a permanent establishment, and that's why it only has to be a minimum of 7 by 7 tefachim. It is an exception to the rest of the Kol HaTorah Kula, where you need an established living space, a permanent living space, which required dalet al dalet amos. Okay, with that little bit of a review, we're going to jump into the Gemara. We are almost about a quarter way down. I would imagine it's still the first page in our scroll. Amar Mar. Okay, Amar Mar. Maybe toward the end of the first section of our scroll or second column in our scroll. Someone can tell me if my guesswork is good on this. Second column in the first page of our scroll? Yeah? No?
No, it's the first column on the bottom of in our scroll.
It's
on the left. It's on
almost.
The left.
You know, it's like it's my game I like to play. Amar Mar. Pater min hamezuza u min hamake. So all of these things that we learned last time, we're rehashing it, that if a building is less than 4x4 amos, it's exempt from mezuzah. You do not have to put a railing on the roof to protect. It's not vulnerable. It's not susceptible to contracting tsaras. And it's not going to be get a status of the regulations for houses that are within a walled city, and also the laws that for certain times that you leave the battlefield to come home, and what is if you have a new home, if it's less than dalid, all of these do not qualify as a house. Why? My time up, the bias to Bukulu, because since they use the term bias, a house, in all of these instances, a bias implies something that is an established structure. And as we learned in the first year, well, we're in the Torah to say 4x4 amos is an established structure. So Shlomo Zalmorbach explained that in many areas of halacha, something could be a biblical requirement, but God entrusted Chazal to figure out precisely where to draw the line. So this is another instance. I'm just going to do a general mute, but you can feel free to unmute if you have a question or just like some background noise. There we go. Okay, you should be able to unmute. So I look forward to your questions. Okay, next. We also learned that such a structure that's less than 4x4 amos, one is does not need to include it in the Eruvei Chatzeros, in the Sheet of Muvos, and you can't even place an Eruv inside it. Why not? My time at Lochazi Ladir, because such a structure is not, it's not Ra'oi, it's not suitable for habitation. It's too small to live in. So just a quick reminder, actually not a quick reminder, a proper reminder on what these halachos are, because it's going to be relevant to the next stage of the Gemara. So let's just rehash this. In general, you have houses that are in a chatzer, okay, that are in a courtyard. And in order to carry from one to the other on Shabbos, in addition to having a wall around it, you also, right, or Tzuras HaPesach, what we call the Erev, you need what's the actual Erev, which is a box of bread or matzahs in someone's home that everyone has a share in, so we could carry from one house to another. So what it's saying is, such a little hut that is less than 4x4 amos, so small that whoever owns that hut doesn't need to contribute for the challah or matzah. It's okay. It's not even a bias to begin with. Likewise, same thing for a mavoi. A mavoi is just an alleyway that connects different courtyards. So think of it as like, you know, like the chatzar, it's a chatzar of a chatzar, so to speak. And we have sheet of muvos. And then the last halacha is telling us is that, because, well, for the same reason, it doesn't, you don't need to contribute to the Erev if you only have a structure less than 4x4 amos. You can't place the Erev inside such a structure because it's not a proper bias. Okay? So that's what it's saying so far. Any questions on that? Because the next part of the Gemara is contingent on understandings. Okay. A Ruvei Chatzeros ein manichem bo, avol shitov manichem bo. What did we just read? We said we do not place the Erev Chatzeros, we don't place inside such a small structure. But that leaves me to infer that I would be able to put the sheet of Muvos inside this lack of a structure. And my time, why would I be able to do that? Because it shouldn't be any worse than a chatzer. In order to combine, to carry from one courtyard to another courtyard via the mavoi, you just need to have bread or matzah, the meal, inside one of the courtyards. It could be outdoors for all we care. If it could be outdoors for all we care, it's certainly no worse if you put it inside a structure less than 4x4 amos. You don't require a house for such a structure. And how do we know this? Here's a slightly long-winded conversation to get to the proof. That's none. A ruve chatzeros bechatzer, shitufei mavoy b'mavoy. So the Mishnah seems to say that the Erev ruve chatzeros can be placed in the courtyard itself, and shitufei mavoy can be placed inside the mavoy itself. Vavinam ba, but this didn't seem to make any sense. A ruve chatzeros bechatzer, can you really place the Erev? Imagine we didn't place it inside the shul, we just placed it in the middle of the courtyard. You can't get away with that. But it's not, because the Mishnah teaches us, hanosin a ruva bebeis shar achsadra umar peses. If you put it, oh, you know what I just realized? If you give me 30 seconds, you know what? I was going to grab my Masechta Gemara that has the photos. I just realized that it's outside and Tali's going to sleep and it'll create a whole havoc. Okay, you'll have to take my word for this. We're going to use our imaginations, guys. Here we go. I trust all of you on this. This is not so hard to actually imagine this part. So we're talking about a beishar, a gatehouse for where the guard booth is, and the achsadra marpeses is the marpeses, like in Israel. So you have the balcony, or you have the overhang area in front of someone's house, what we might call, for lack of a better term, the porch area. Since these are not properly inside the house or a proper house, ain't no Erev. You can't place an Erev in there. It has to be in a bona fide house. Ba'adarsham ain't no Oser. And likewise, someone who is living in the guard booth or lives on the marpeset. So such a person does not need to contribute toward the Erev because they're not really considered to be living inside a home in the chatzer. So how do I make sense of this? How can the first Mishnah say that I could get away with placing the box of matzahs in the chatzer itself to effectuate an Eruv chatzeros? Ela Ema, this is how you have to read it. Eruv chatzeros b'bayis sheba chatzer u'shitube muvaos b'chatzer sheba mavoy. The Eruv chatzeros is supposed to be placed, you have to add in a few words over here, that's what we do. Add in a few words. For an Eruv Chatzeros, you place it inside a house that's in the courtyard. And for Shitufei Muvos, it's sufficient to put it even inside a courtyard that's connected to the Mavoy.
Rabbi, excuse me. I don't understand what a Shitufei Muvos is. What is that?
Okay, good. I'm glad you asked. So Shitufei Muvos is like an Eruv Chatzeros, but on a grander scale. Happens to be, the Ramah says that we don't really have mavois nowadays. Our community is just not built that way. But so you remember what a mavoi is, right? So a mavoi is just...
No, I don't know what a mavoi is.
Oh, okay, good. Oh, so let's rehash that. Okay, very good. So it came up, I remember because you had it was in the first...
Maybe I missed it. I'm sorry.
No, it's all good. Chazar is important. So imagine just an alleyway, and then this alley kind of has branches off into different chatzeros. You have straight alley, chatzer A, chatzer B, chatzer D, chatzer C. So what you have to do is, in order to carry from chatzer A to chatzer B via the mavoy, you also have to have what's called a shituf mavos. And the shituf is what it sounds like. It partners everyone together. But because it's joining courtyards, not houses per se, the shituf doesn't need to actually be put inside a house. It's sufficient to put it somewhere in a courtyard, and it's as if we're all living in the same courtyard.
And is it also a loaf of bread?
So yeah, it would be the same principle. And in fact, what we do nowadays is kind of both in one shot. So when you have the matzahs and the shul, I'm not sure how it was figured out, but apparently it's at the Young Israel. I checked the Rabbi Kol. He's renewing it before Pesach. It should be done, so we're all set. I remembered to check in on it because if you are interested, guys, in doing a field trip, I don't know if he actually did the renewal yet. So if you want to see the renewal ceremony, which takes definitely just about 1 minute to do, if not less, I can let you know when we're going to do it. It's just a matter of saying a few things, handing it over, someone else accepts it on behalf of the entire community, and then that way each of us has a share in that box of matzos, and you might not even know you have a share in that box of matzos. But you know what that's called? Zachin la'adam shalo b'fanav, that you are allowed to be mezakeh as someone, grant someone merit or not merit per se, grant someone that's something that's beneficial to them, even without their consent. So
what if, let's say, you're just somebody that's visiting the community in a particular week and you haven't contributed, you haven't paid dues, you like in no way do you have anything to do with this box of matzah. You're still able to benefit from it?
What do you mean by benefit?
See, because from what I understand from the original concept, everyone had to donate to, or, you know, to contribute something to be part of this Erev Chatzeres.
Oh, interesting point. Interesting point. You know what? I do remember this question coming up. I don't remember what the resolution was. I mean, there may have been a stipulation, I think, that anyone who comes into the community, they also will have a share in it. I think that's the I think that's the stipulation that we make. That's my recollection as to how we deal with it. But I remember your question is a question that is discussed in the postgame.
I don't think everybody has to actually contribute or participate in the community, because down here in the southwest corner of Nassau County, abutting Far Rockaway, we have a Far Rockaway Eruv, and we have other contiguous Eruv, and you walk from one to the other, and you don't even live in one of them, but you can carry.
Yeah. I think it's under the assumption that anyone who's coming will have a share in that. There's a corollary concept called in chavna the shel b'fanav. You can't just acquire things that are to people's detriment without their consent. So that was my ninth grade Rebbe's example. I'm sure I've shared this with you multiple times. He said, he pointed me out as the example. Like, if I was walking the street and I saw a movie there and I picked up the DVD and I said, I'm acquiring it for Moshe Kurtz. So then it would have no halachic standing, because in chavim ladim shel b'fanav, you're not allowed to acquire something for someone without their consent. But you know, actually, in halacha, another instance that zachal ladim shel b'fanav comes up is for bar bas mitzvahs that we have. The procedure that rabbanim will generally do if they're going to give a Tanakh, or you're going to give, especially if you're going to give something that's not so practical that the kid's probably not going to make use of that moment on Shabbos. So what we do is we actually will give the gifts to someone else to acquire it on the child's behalf before Shabbos, because you're not supposed to give gifts on Shabbos. Now, before you're like, how do I bring wine to a meal that I'm going to? There's a few heterim. I mean, one is if it's Letzorech Shabbos, if it's necessary for Shabbos, like for a meal, that's a great example, then there's no issue. If you could also, by the way, just say, I'm not giving you anything, I'm not going to hold it against you if you do want to drink from it. That'd be another way to deal with that. Or Zachlan Shel B'fanav before Shabbos. But okay. So let's get back to the Gemara. Now that we're armed with our understanding Shitufei Mavos, the Gemara finishes off. And so such a structure that is less than dalet al dalet amos is no worse than putting the sheet of right in the middle of the courtyard. If you put it right in the middle of the courtyard, why would it be any worse to put it inside a structure that's smaller than a house that's inside the courtyard? Makes sense? Good. The Gemara makes sense, as it should. Next. This piece over here, this is going to spend some time on this one. It's a short one, but there's what to analyze. Ve'in otzano so ibor bein shtei ayaro. So as we mentioned before, each city has a tchum of 2,000 amos beyond the city limits. And if you want to combine two cities, as long as you have a house that's out there in between both of them, it could combine both of them in order to create one super tchum around the entire, around the two cities collectively. So we mentioned previously that a house, or a lack of a house, because it's less than 4x4 amos, enos and iber ben shtei ayaros, because it's insignificant, it doesn't have the power to combine the radius, the borders of both cities, halakhically. And dafilu kiborgen in lo mishavin unlay, and we don't even treat it like the what it translates, like guardhouses or something. What's the official article translation on it? Aborgen, we got, oh, here we go, Rashi. Tzrif sha'osim in aravo ukiin l'shomer peiros Yeah. So it's like a little hut that they make out of willows and out of reeds for those who watch the who are guarding the fruits and the birds that are out in the field. Okay, Rashi gives us the translation. What's the official article translation? They call it a hut. Yeah, hut. Oh, okay.
Gatehouse.
Okay.
Am I in the right place?
Beis Shar might be what you're looking at. You might be looking at Beis Shar possibly.
Yeah.
Okay. Borgen is a similar idea. It's not to guard the apartment complex or the condo area, but it's to guard the fruits and the animals that are in the field. Anyway, the Fuka Borgen Lomashavidan Lay. A house that, or a lack of a house that's out there, is not even as good as a hut that's out there. My time, Borgenin chutz l'milsayv, because the Borgenin, despite being small, they are serving their purpose. Bahai lo chutz l'milsayv, whereas this house is not serving its purpose. Okay, let me explain what's going on here. There is a debate, the Ritva, they got our good friend the Ritva. The Ritva is one of the primary medieval commentaries that we've made reference to many times on Shas. And the Ritva gives two possibilities on how to understand this. One possibility is that a Borgenin, despite the fact that it's not meant for someone to live in, the fact that it's Dalad Amos, that might be what the Gemara is saying. But the Ritva actually has a more radical interpretation of what's happening here in the Gemara. The Ritva says, Bahanachon, the Hagi Kamar, da filu kiborganin, she ain't behem dalan amos of dalan amos. Even a borganin that has less than 4x4 amo dimensions, lo mishabina lay, it's still going to be better than a living structure that is less than 4x4 amos. De borganin chosen milsayu, because even though it's less than 4x4, it's supposed to be like this mini little hut for the guy to hang out in the field while watching the fruits. It fulfills its purpose, even though it's less than 4x4 amos. So the Ritva says, this is remarkable. The 4x4 amo rule seems to have yet another exception. That if the structure is not even meant for dira, it's not meant for living in, but it serves its purpose, so then it can be even less than 4x4 amos, and it can be regarded as a proper structure that's able to combine even two cities together. And to add a chiddush on top of this, according to the Sfas Emes writes, Ulafizeh besukas achag ledidam desagi barosha berubo. If you recall, there's another structure out there that we said is fully kosher, even if it's less than 4x4 amos. And what's that? A sukkah. A sukkah doesn't need to be 4x4 amos. Rosh Yeruba Ruba V'Shulchano. Only 7x7 Tvachim. So what's the Sfas Emes infer from the Ritva? Yesh Lomar, the Choshev Shaber Chozi Milsayhu. So the Sfas Emes says, by the same logic, a sukkah is able to fulfill its purpose. So since a sukkah is meant to only be a diras arai, it should be able to combine both cities together, despite the fact that's less than 4x4 amos, because its shear is only 7x7. So he takes the Ritva's more radical interpretation of the Gemara, and he takes it to his logical conclusion by claiming that even a sukkah can combine two ayaros. Yes,
it would have to be a structure used by humans. It wouldn't be, let's say, a structure to keep animals in.
So it would seem from these examples, at least. Yeah, I think that's
a doghouse room too.
Yes, Paul.
Yeah. So if it's okay to be even less than 4x4 amos because it serves its unique purpose, does that mean in that case they still hire for mezuzah?
Ah, interesting question. Right. I like where you're going here with this. You know, it's like, let's take it to its logical extreme. You know, So the thing is, though, what I would respond is that we saw earlier in the Gemara that for mezuzah in the pasuk, it uses the term bayis, a house. So it seems a mezuzah can only go on a bayis, which is 4x4. But in terms of combining two cities together, it doesn't seem, I guess because, it doesn't seem to have the term bias there, it would seem. But it's a good try. That's a good try. I think the Gemara, by pointing out that it has the word bias, that means that the 4x4 is an absolute requirement. But good point.
When we say bias, would that include a business office or a store?
There is a whole debate about corporate settings, whether they require mezuzahs to begin with. We go l'chumra, but we don't make a bracha per se. But yes, there's a whole debate about corporate settings, when and to what degree do they need a mezuzah. So yes, Judd.
But a sukkah is a temporary structure, and we really don't live in it per se. So how can it be used in that way?
I agree, Judd. And when I looked at this over last Shabbos, I thought I saw it somewhere. If not, then maybe we both thought of the same thing, that maybe a sukkah is less than a borgenin, because the borgenin, they are meant to stay there as that kind of structure. But a sukkah, it's only, we're going to talk about this especially in next week's Amud. We're going to discuss how it's only meant for 7 days. That's how we measure it. So maybe something that's only meant as a diras arai won't be sufficient.
And it's really susceptible to the weather conditions too.
That is interesting. That comes back to the Tosas we learned in our first year about how you're able to make the walls out of iron, and to what degree can the schach also be made very sturdy. But yeah, Tosas seemed to say, even according to Rava, it needs to still be susceptible to the rain, at least via the schach. But you'd be allowed to make the walls out of iron if you want. Mm-hmm. So, okay, fair enough. Toby?
I mean, the one thing that I keep thinking about is that all these different comparative structures, none of them are mandated halachically for us to have at all. You don't have to have a house. You don't have to have a hut. You don't have to have any of these things. But you do have to have a sukkah because the Torah says you do. That kind of changes the comparisons, I would think, to an extent. I mean, it limits the extent to which you can be making parallels.
Well, it's interesting. And then you have to distinguish between a sukkah on the first night versus a sukkah the rest of Yom Tov. Because there is a mitzvah to dwell in the sukkah on the first night, but then the rest of the Yom Tov, we did a shiur on this 1 or 2 years ago, yes. I think. Mm-hmm. We talked about, maybe it's just a matir. If I want to eat food, then I have to go out to the sukkah.
Right.
But there's no chiyuv per se that I need to go on my way. So even within the holiday sukkahs, there's what to distinguish there.
Right. But still, I mean, but the basic concept of it is halachically mandated. Whereas with the other things, if you never had any of those things,
I hear the distinction. So what would be the ramifications of that?
I'm not sure.
it's a good observation, though. It's a good observation. You're right. You can choose not to carry it all on Shabbos, and then you don't need an Erev. So you can choose not to have a house, and then you don't have to put up a mezuzah. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's like a discussion about tzitzis. You know, a man doesn't have to wear tzitzis, but if he wears a four-cornered garment that has all the specifications, then he has to put tzitzis on the garment. So we like to fulfill more mitzvahs if we can, so that's why we wear such garments, so we can be mechayev ourselves in it.
Right. But with sukkah, since you are mandated to have the sukkah, automatically all the other laws regarding sukkah also become mandatory.
Very interesting. Yes, I agree with that observation.
Well, we have to remember why we have a sukkah in the first place.
That's a later Gemara. Don't. No, okay. yes. Absolutely. Okay. Good discussion. Let's get back into the Gemara. We, another halacha that we kind of glossed over, but we did mention it in the Raisa that we cited last time, is that it sounded like, just from the Braisa, that a house that is 4x4 amos, sorry, less than 4x4 amos, we do not divide. Let's say there's inheritance. The children are dividing the estate of their parents, and there is a structure that's less than 4x4 amos. They would not be expected to divide something like that up because you wouldn't really have much of any structure left because you didn't have much of anything to begin with. So back into the Gemara, the Eina Achim Vashutfin Cholkinbo. So what's the reason that such a lack of a structure may not be divided? Taima Delesbe Dalit. The reason is because it doesn't have 4x4 amos. But the implication is, but Isbe Dalit Amos Cholkin. The implication is that even if you started off with 4x4 amos, even if you're not going to end up with 4x4 amos in the end, you would divide such a structure. This is contradicted by the following Mishnah. Ein cholken es achatzer, aji ba arba amos azeh, ba arba amos azeh. It sounds like we're not supposed to divide up any property unless everyone winds up with 4x4 amos. Meaning, it's not enough just to start off with 4x4 amos. Everyone needs to end up with at least 4x4 amos. Otherwise, such a plot of land that's less than 4x4 amos is just insignificant. There's nothing much you can do with such a small portion of land. So rather, how should we make sense of this ruling from the Braisa? Ela'ema ein bo din chaluka bechatzer. There is no law of chaluka in such a chatzer. Now, what do I mean by this? So now, I think Talia went to sleep. The picture book is very important. So if you give me 30 seconds, I'm going to grab my Masifta Gemara so I can show you the photos because it's very easy to understand the photos. So one moment, please. Okay, here we go. Okay, so there are two ways to divide the chatzer. One is imo din chaluka bechatzer. To Amar Rav Huna, chatzer lefi pischeha mischalekes. According to Rav Huna, let's say there are two brothers who are dividing up a courtyard. So we divide it based on the amount of doors that there are. So here we go. Now that I brought the Gemara, it gives you the color pictures in the back. Why don't I show you the color pictures? One thing I'll show you. Toby, this is for you and for everyone. Let's see if I can see this right. This over here is a mavoi. Can you see that? See that, how there's like that alleyway, and then it breaks off into different chatzers. So just to help visualize, we're talking about a mavoi before. Mavoi is this alleyway here. And then here are the chatzers, the courtyards it breaks off to. Are you able to see it? Is that, yeah? Okay. Anyone who wants, I can bring it to Shul, I can show you the photo. The other picture that we need to see is as follows. Let me see if I can find it. Okay. Hopefully you'll be able to see this well. So here is the case that we're talking about, where you have one brother who owns this big house over here, and the other brother you can see owns those three smaller houses over there. And the question is how we divide such a chatzer. We can either, so if we go, okay, so here we go. Okay, so hopefully it helps you envision it. If we go according to Rav Huna, and we divide it based on the amount of doorways, so then the brother who owns those three small houses will wind up getting 3/4 of the chatzer, whereas the brother, even though he owns a big house, but there's only one front door to the house, he only walks away with 1/4 of the chatzer. The other way to assess it, and again, there's some details in the picture here, so you'll let me know if you can see it or not, is that the second way, which we're reading in the Gemara in a moment, is that everyone gets Dalet Amos in front of their houses. That's like for unloading when you come home with the groceries. So that way that's your exclusive space that you're allowed to unload into. And then from there, they just split it down the middle. The rest of the chatzar, though, is a 50-50 split. Okay? And that's the second sheet, the back of the Gemara. So Rav Chista Amar, Nozlichol Pesach L'Pesach Arba Amos. Each and every entryway gets four Amos exclusively to itself. The Hashar Cholkin Oso B'Shoven. So in the rest, we just split down the middle 50-50. So instead of the first opinion, which was 3/4 to 1 because of 3 doors to 1 door, here it's 50-50 because it's 2 people who are vying for the property. Okay. Now, the Hani Mili, this entire machlokus presupposes that we're talking about a bayis lahavikai, an established house, yavino le chatzer. So, such a house, we give a portion of the chatzer. Hai lemistar kai, but a house which is smaller than by 4x4, we assume it's going to be torn down and something else will be built on that property. Lo yavino le chatzer. We do not give such a structure a chatzer. And that's what we are referring to when we say that they don't split less than 4x4. What it means is, of course, the house has to have at least 4x4 in the end of the day. But what's teaching us is that in order for you to even have a claim to a portion of the courtyard, the structure that you own has to have at least 4x4 amos in order to give you a proper claim to the property. Okay? It's a little involved over there, but that's the general principle. Okay. And we'll end off with one last piece in the Gemara just to kick off the next sugya. But okay. So completely new case. We're done with the 4x4 Amos stuff. If you enjoyed it, I'm sorry to say we finished it for now. And if you didn't, don't worry, we're moving on. And we have other complicated Gemaras to look forward to. So remember that rule we learned all the way back in the first year? And according to the Chachamim, if a sukkah exceeds 20 amos, it's pasul. Well, let's say you have one of those sukkahs that's taller than 20 amos. And you want to put in, you know, different pillows and mattresses and cushioning that can, but you kind of, instead of lowering the walls in the schach, you want to elevate the ground level in the sukkah so that functionally you have less than 20 amos from your new ground level. But the issue is, instead of putting proper concrete or earth in there, you're just putting cushions that you took from your outdoor couch. So lo havi miut, it would not work. That's not a good ploy. Bava got to betzlinu lekulhu, even though Rashi points out, I am declaring that I plan on keeping these cushions here for all 7 days of Sukkot. I'm not going to move them. This is going to be my floor for the Sukkah. Mishum de batla daito etzol kol adam. Very important concept in Torah in general that we will elaborate on next time, God willing, that even though I might consider these cushions to be the new floor of the Sukkah, most of the world, when you look at such cushions, you don't see an elevated floor. You just see padding on top of the floor. And so this comes up. We're going to be talking about in the Gemara. I believe we'll be talking about chatzitos when it comes to mikvah. But I'll just tell you a little bit about it right now. So when someone has to go to a mikvah, generally laws of mikvah, because nowadays we don't have a base of mikvah. So we kind of just think about mikvah in terms of hilchos nida for women. In theory, the same thing applies to men. And by the way, same halakha for the tilas yadayim. So the rule is that if something, at least on a derabbanan level, is either covering the majority of your body or section of your body, that's also a little bit of a debate. And if you're makbid on it, so then it's considered a chatzitza, it's imposing between you and the water, which of course is problematic. So the question is though, who needs to be makbid on it in order to make it problematic? You know, what if like, I love having mud on my hands all the time. So is that a chatzitza? So some suggest that what actually chatzitza would be is that, you know, bata dato itzakol adam, even if I like to be dirty, if most people consider something to be an issue that they would want to clean themselves off before, let's say, making bread or cooking, so then that's considered chatzitza, even though I'm not as hygienic as everyone else. Now, the issue is, the hygiene in America is different than the hygiene in insert third world country over here. So who am I looking to for my cues? So Rav Levy, I think is his name. I have a nice Hilchos Nida book from a Rav in the Gush. I'm forgetting his name. I think his name is Rav Levy. And so he suggests that's based on your community. So you would ask all the women in Stanford, what are they makpedas on? And that's what would determine it. Okay. So anyway, we'll elaborate on that idea a little bit more next time. I see we are already at the 45-minute mark. So God willing, I'll have to this one hold this one off till next time. But I guess to whet your appetite, to make you excited, God willing, for next year, I still have a piece from Rav Soloveitchik on a halacha that we glossed over today. Another halacha we glossed over was the requirement to build a ma'akeh, to build a railing on your roof to prevent people from falling off. So the halacha is, though, that if your structure is less than 4x4 amos, you don't have to put a railing to protect people from falling off. And the question is, why, if it's less than 4x4, does it make it any less dangerous? Well, I would think all the more so, there's less space up there. Someone's more likely going to fall off. I should have to put a railing up over there. So Rav Soloveitchik addresses this question, and that's my preview for next year. How about that? All right.
I'm sorry, could you just translate? I know what machmir is. Can you translate exactly what machpid means?
A machpid? Mm-hmm. You know, it's one of those Hebrew words that doesn't have a good English correlative, but what?
Obsession.
That's strong. Or like you're particular about something.
You know, how is that different than machmir?
Machmir is you're being stringent about something.
The higher level.
Machmir
is higher.
They'll sometimes be used interchangeably. Like machmir is like, you know, you have a hakpada. They are used interchangeably, but they don't always mean the same thing. And here, like machmir is here. I'm like, for instance, when I teach my class on Thursdays in bicultural with the kids. So kids, you guys come to shiur and you guys want to learn. So you're here by your own volition. So, you know, I don't need to, you know, control talking here. You know, it's wonderful when you guys want to speak. But when I have the kids, you know, I need to rein them in a little bit. So I would say in that context, I'm machbid on talking out of line. What was that, Phyllis?
In particular, or your strength.
It's one of those words that you kind of like contextually is the best way. Okay. Are you saying something, Phyllis, or is that background noise?
Very strict.
Yes. Okay. Very good. All right. Well, I'm glad we could clear that up. It's honestly one of those words that whenever I try translating when I'm writing something, it always depends on the content. But okay. All right, wishing everyone a wonderful Shabbos. It'll still
Thank
be 7:35 next week. We'll make the shift after Pesach, God willing. Okay, take care.
Thank you.
Good Shabbos. Thank you.